Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Defending New Jersey Audits of VDA Returns conference call. For the duration of the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. For operator assistance, please press star then zero at any time during the conference. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, May 24th. I would now like to turn the conference over to Kyle Soley. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and hello. My name is Kyle Soley, and with me today is Dave Gutowski. We're partners at Reed Smith. For those of you who aren't familiar with Reed Smith has the largest state tax practice and law firm. We have lawyers all over the country practicing exclusively state tax, and we have the largest New Jersey state tax practice and a law firm. Of course, New Jersey is the topic of our teleseminar today. Today's program is scheduled to go about 20 minutes long, and we are planning to work from a PowerPoint slideshow that you should have gotten yesterday by email and also in a reminder email sent about 15 minutes ago or so. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Dave, who's going to kick us off on slide number two.
Thanks, Kyle. By now, everyone should be familiar with throw-out. New Jersey enacted it in 2002 and repealed it for 2011. Under the statute, you've got to throw out any receipts from your sales fraction denominator that get sourced to a state where you're not subject to a tax. The Division of Taxation's view is that you need to actually file a return for throw-out to not apply. For the average holding company, their sales fraction with throw-out can approach 100% and create millions of dollars of exposure. Because of this, hundreds of holding companies came forward and did VDAs. Under the standard VDA terms, the taxpayer could pay tax without throw-out, but the division had the right to come back later and conduct an audit. Depending on how the courts ruled in the facial throw-out challenges, the division could issue additional assessments based on that throw-out. Last year, the New Jersey Supreme Court issued its Whirlpool decision, and it ruled that throw-out is generally constitutional on its face. Now the division is going back and auditing VDA returns, and in some cases, it's issuing multimillion-dollar assessments. Holding companies that once thought that they had put throw-out behind them are now having to deal with it all over again. The problem can extend beyond holding companies. There was a recent VDA initiative for media companies, and what's happening now to holding companies may be what's in store for media companies. Let's move on to slide three. After the New Jersey Supreme Court's Whirlpool decision, the case got remanded back to the tax court to see if throw-out's unconstitutional or unfair as applied, and also to see how the statute should be interpreted. Mainly, how do you determine if you're subject to tax? Does that mean you really have to file a return? The motion for summary judgment was recently pushed back by the judge to September. Meanwhile, there are other throw-out cases that are pending in the tax court involving issues such as whether throw-out applies if you're 86-272 protected, and also whether throw-out applies to foreign royalties that are subject to foreign withholding. Moving on to slide four, what should you do if you're under audit? The division's policy is that unless you file a return in a state, throw-out can apply. To the extent that intercompany receipts are getting eliminated, filing a unitary combined return doesn't count. When an auditor sees that the audit involves a holding company, many of them go into automatic pilot mode, and they compute the tax using the division's standard alternative apportionment method, which is to multiply your New Jersey source gross royalties by the statutory tax rate of 9%. You shouldn't fall into this trap. You still need to do the throw-out calculation because in many cases, it'll be lower than what you get using the 9% method. When doing the calculation, don't let the auditor disregard your property and payroll fractions. Even if you're not reporting any property or payroll expense, you should still be entitled to a fraction. As long as you've got officers outside of New Jersey, you should still get a 0% fraction for property and payroll, and you can use those fractions to dilute your sales fraction. Second, you shouldn't throw out receipts that are sourced to your headquarters state. Even the division itself has conceded that throwout shouldn't apply to your headquarters state, regardless of the type of return you file there. Third, don't forget about net worth or gross receipts taxes. For example, before the cap, Ohio had an alternative net worth component. Even if your holding company didn't pay the net worth component, this can still protect you from throwout. Fourth, be sure to raise offsetting refund issues for your operating company. Of course, you should raise throwout issues for your operating company, but you should go beyond that as well and raise other issues. A refund claim will give you more leverage, could position yourself for a walkaway. Right now, the division's standard throwout settlement is about 50-50, but you should try to make your situation as unique as possible by adding other issues to the mix. That way, you'll give the division more flexibility to reach a settlement without creating precedent for other taxpayers. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, you need to evaluate or reevaluate how your receipts are getting sourced. And for this, I'll turn it over to Kyle, who will discuss it beginning on slide 5.
Thanks, Dave. So turning to slide 5, so Dave mentioned one of the things you need to take a look at is the sourcing of your receipts. And where we're going to start with this is the sourcing of receipts for operating companies. Dave talked a lot about VDAs for holding companies and tangible holding companies, but we're going to start with sourcing for operating companies. Because even the sourcing of your intangible holding companies is often based on the sourcing for your operating companies. Now, New Jersey has a unique set of rules, or at least a set of rules that's different from the UDIPA rules. So, for example, service providers. Service providers in New Jersey don't just follow a statutory UDIPA cost of performance rule. Instead, New Jersey has a regulation that we think is considerably more flexible than that and gives taxpayers an option between costs, between time spent, and between, frankly, any other method, says the regulation, that reasonably reflects the economics of the transaction. And that could be a market method or some other method. So there's a lot of flexibility in the regulation for service providers sourcing their receipts. Now, one application of that that we've been able to resolve matters using is New Jersey's 25-50-25 rule. Now, originally designed for ATM transactions, the rule has been applied outside of that area. Essentially what it is a rule that says 25% for a service transaction, 25% of the transaction is sourced to where the transaction originates, 50% is sourced to where the service is provided, and 25% is sourced to where the transaction terminates. In practice, what this often means is that it's a 50% market and 50% where the service is performed or cost-based approach. So consider this when you're taking a look, if you're a service provider, when you're taking a look at your sales fraction. The other area we want to point out that is a useful area to examine for sourcing is for sellers of tangible personal property. Again, under the UDIPA rules, that's usually a fairly straightforward exercise. Many states, it's simply a ship-to rule. New Jersey is not so easy, or at least New Jersey gives you some opportunities to and some flexibility to sign those sales somewhere else, especially in the area of dock sales and drop shipments. Let's take drop shipments as an example. There's a case in New Jersey called Stryker, and in the Stryker case, the New Jersey Supreme Court essentially established an origination rule for drop shipments. So if your business involves a significant amount of drop shipments, and those drop shipments originate outside of New Jersey, consider that Stryker rule because you may be able to source considerable portion of your sales outside of New Jersey. We have several cases where this is at issue, and sometimes the issue can drive the sales factor down to zero. Now again, take a look at these issues for your operating company, but remember, the operating company resourcing will often drive any intangible holding company sourcing that derives from the way the operating company is sourcing its receipts. So you should consider both filing a refund claim for your intangible holding company as well as doing so for your operating company and using both as a way to mitigate the impact of the audit under your VDA. Another thing we encourage you to take a look at is whether you can distinguish your situation from LANCO. LANCO, of course, involved royalties derived from a retail operation. trademark royalties related to a retail operation. To the extent, though, that your royalties are not connected to retail operation or on-the-ground operations in New Jersey, there may be some opportunity to resource your sales, even if they're trademark royalties. Now, there is a regulation that provides that trademark royalties are sourced based on where the licensee makes its sales. In other words, the licensor sources the royalties based on the licensee's sales factor. But in order to get to that rule under the regulation, the trademarks must be, quote, utilized in business in New Jersey. And we think that there is some flexibility or room to argue that if your business isn't as connected to New Jersey as Lanco's was or as Lane Bryant's was, that perhaps your trademark isn't utilized in business in New Jersey. And that brings us to our last point. There is an important case that is now pending in tax court involving Bank of America. And we think that that case is very instructive to things that you can do or should consider doing in connection with your VDA. Now, Bank of America did a VDA for its credit card companies, and it agreed, it conceded nexus, and it paid millions and millions of dollars in returns that it filed under the VDA. What it did after that, however, was it filed refund claims. It filed refund claims because it got the Division of Taxation to rule that even though it had nexus, its lending was, without physical presence in the state, was disconnected enough from New Jersey that it wasn't integrated with a business in New Jersey and that those receipts shouldn't be sourced to New Jersey. In other words, although Bank of America had nexus and conceded as much in its VDA, in its refund claims, and in the ruling it got from the division, it was able to convince the division, at least at one point, that its receipts shouldn't be sourced to the state. Now, the division changed its mind after it issued those rulings, thus the litigation, but at least there's clearly an opportunity for taxpayers who've done VDAs to take a look at their sourcing and take a position on sourcing that reduces their tax substantially and in some cases reduces it to zero. Now I'm going to move to slide number 6, and we're going to talk about another application of sourcing, and that's in the area of patent royalties. As I mentioned earlier, there is a rule in the regulation that says for trademark royalties are sourced based on the licensee's sales factor percentage. Now, it's important to note that that regulation only applies to trademark royalties. It doesn't necessarily apply to patent royalties. Patent royalties are governed by a rule that simply says they're sourced to where the patent is used by the licensee. What's important here is that auditors will take the position that if the patent royalty is computed by reference to the licensee's sales, so the operating company sells 5% of its products in New Jersey, the auditor is going to say 5% of the royalties get sourced in New Jersey. Although that's convenient for the auditor, it's not the rule provided by the regulation. If that patent is a process patent, and if no manufacturing is conducted in New Jersey, then no amount of that patent-related royalty should be sourced to New Jersey. So if you've got patent royalties in your intangible holding company and the division is auditing your VDA return, in addition to protesting what they're doing on throwout, you should also take the position that your sales factor numerator should be zero. Another thing to look at is we have clients who have amounts that they're earning in their intangible holding companies or otherwise that are bundles. They're bundles of services, trademarks, patents, know-how. And here, the key is to bifurcate those amounts into the various components and source each one according to its separate rule. So trademarks may be sourced based on a market rule. However, patents and services in New Jersey could be sourced using a different rule, an origination rule, a commercial domicile rule. So by bifurcating that stream, you may be able to reallocate some of those receipts and reduce the sales factor numerator. Again, giving yourself an opportunity to mitigate the audit adjustment. But what's important here is that if you filed your VDA return, sourcing those patent receipts or other receipts on a market basis, if you file a refund claim within 4 years of when you filed that VDA return, so you're in the best position to negotiate some resolution in the middle. I'm going to turn it back to Dave to slide seven, when Dave can talk us through some more taxpayer options.
The big question that everybody asks is whether they should settle now or wait for Whirlpool. Most people I talk to, at least other than the division itself, think that Whirlpool is ultimately going to win, and Kyle and I both agree with that. I don't think there's much doubt that throwout's unfair as applied to Whirlpool. Why should New Jersey get to tax all of its income just because no other state is taxing it? But even if Whirlpool wins that issue, the remedy might not be to strike throughout completely. The court could order some other type of remedy that might not be any better than the 9% method that's available to your holding company now. The real question in Whirlpool is whether New Jersey's nexus standard is going to get applied in determining whether your holding company is subject to tax in another state. If you use the New Jersey standard, your holding company is going to be deemed taxable everywhere, and by definition, throwout can't apply. The statutory issue is somewhat less clear than the fairness issue, but Whirlpool is still likely to win. But that doesn't mean you should just sit back and wait. In deciding whether to settle now, there are some other factors you need to consider. First, you might not even have the luxury of waiting for Whirlpool. Once the audit genie comes out of the bottle, it's tough to put it back in. The standard VDA closing agreement, it let taxpayers hold their appeals pending the facial challenges to throw out, but those challenges are now over. If the division selects you for audit, you may be forced to respond and appeal any final assessment. The problem is there's no real mechanism for holding your case pending Whirlpool. The division can try to make you have the hearing and issue a final decision, which you then have to appeal to tax court. So in deciding whether or not to settle, you have to consider the potential appeal and litigation costs. Second, no matter how strongly you think Whirlpool's case is, you still have to factor in some risk for litigation. The vast majority of cases that move through the tax court involve property taxes. And even for that tiny sliver of state tax cases that move through the court, most of them don't involve corporate income tax. So it's easy for a judge to get confused. We see this happen all the time. Now, in some instances, it actually helps the taxpayer. But in other cases, it doesn't. The problem is it's hard to speculate how that's going to play out in a particular case. So even if you think throwout is a clear winner, you've got to discount your chances by at least 20% based on the risk of litigation. Third, you have to consider timing. Whirlpool filed its appeal way back in 2007. So over 5 years later, and we're only halfway through. It could be another 5 years before we get a final decision. In the meantime, you're facing potential underpayment interest that's clicking away at 3% above prime, and it's compounded annually. So you have to factor in the time value of money when deciding whether or not to settle. Finally, don't forget about the impact of the royalty add-back on your operating company. For some taxpayers, the impact of throwout is a lot less than they think. Under the New Jersey statute, an operating company has to add back any affiliated royalty expenses, but it gets an exception to the extent that the royalty company pays tax to New Jersey. Essentially, it's like your operating company getting a credit for taxes paid by the holding company. In certain cases, especially when the operating company has retail stores, the additional cost of throwout is largely offset by a bigger deduction at the operating company level. So before you take up the fight against throwout, you need to make sure that throwout really is your problem. So when you factor in the potential fees and costs and the risks of litigation, and then the time value of money, even a 100% case is probably no better than 70% or so. And since the division's standard throwout settlement is hovering around 50% right now, it means that the division and the average taxpayer are probably not that far apart. The question is whether you can raise the right mix of issues to allow you to bridge that gap. The division has made some clear signals that it's open to settlement, and our own recent experience is consistent with that. We've negotiated some very favorable throwout settlements, even where the taxpayer is a holding company. But according to some of our contacts at the division, it seems that many taxpayers are waiting on the sidelines to see what the courts say in Whirlpool. In our view, there's no harm in at least trying to take a run at settling your throwout appeal now. You might save yourself years of having the throwout exposure hanging over your head, and you might even be able to take down your exposure and any reserve you have put up for it. You may end up paying a little more than what you'd pay if Whirlpool ultimately wins, but you know, it's really a form of risk management, like insurance. And if you can package up the right mix of issues, you might find that the cost of that insurance is relatively modest. One last point is that you're not precluded from claiming a refund just because you filed returns under voluntary disclosure. The typical VDA terms, they don't prohibit this, and as Kyle mentioned, this is exactly what Bank of America is doing. So after you've evaluated your sourcing method, if you've got a position to source fewer receipts to New Jersey, consider filing a refund claim. If nothing else, it could give you more leverage in settlement negotiations. Just remember that you only have 4 years from the date you filed the return to file your claim.
Thanks, Dave. Well, that's the end of our program for today. Dave and my contact information are on the front page of the slide deck. Feel free to contact either one of us if you'd like to discuss your own audit. We hope you found today's program useful, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line.